Blog Talk Radio.
Well, well, that didn't go so well. Welcome to Garden of the Lightning with Louie Wildev. We're having issues with the playing of the intro music, so that is okay. We'll start early today. We're doing front page picks and open poetry. And also today is a sad day for the United States because today is 9/11. And, you know, we're looking back in silence and in heartfelt and with tears with everything that happened 22 years ago. And, you know, it is a reminder, and we want to thank all the people, you know, who at this anniversary, and we want to focus on the first responders and honoring all the victims that were in that tragedy. And we are going to start our show off today with a memorial written by our very own Laurent. And I'm going to be picking up callers so we can go ahead and start the show in remembrance of those that have fallen. So let me pick up my first caller. Hello, Scotland.
Well, hello, America.
How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Hi, Katie. How are you doing this wonderful day?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm very pleased to be here.
Thank you, and I'm so happy to have you. And let me pick up our other callers. Okay, let me see. Caller 239, who am I speaking with?
Hi, my name is Bill Schiller.
Will?
Hi, can you hear me?
Did you say
it's
your
Bill
name
Schiller?
Was Will? Yeah, Will. Bill. Hi, Bill.
Bill.
Welcome, welcome.
Bill Schiller.
Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show. So happy to have you. You're a fabulous commenter and reader. So I'm looking forward to it. Welcome, welcome.
And thank you for that wonderful shout out to first responders. They don't get enough credit, and that's really, you know, today we should all be mindful of not only what they did that day, but what they do every day.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Bill. And caller 585 is, I'm going to be really nice today, Mr. Laurent.
Hello, bonsoir, les Etats. Bonsoir, les Etats-Unis. Ici, la belle France.
Bonsoir. And I'm so happy to have you. And thank you for serving our country.
May I just echo what Bill said?
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And we're going to start our day today with your poem, Laurent. And Katie, could you please add that? And there you are. You're so...
My pleasure.
Thank you. And Laurent, did you want to go ahead and read the title and then have him read?
Yes, of course. Right. This is Cloudburst by Laurent. Please go ahead.
All right. A brief preface. I had seen a number of videos, 9/11 videos over the last week, and many more than I normally watch, probably 25 or 30 of them. And I kind of immersed myself in them, and all of a sudden I realized that an entire generation is growing up without ever really being presented what that day was all about. So I read one survivor's tale that kind of gave me the germ of a story, and this is called Cloudburst. Drowning in smoke and fire. I can't swim in the air. Is survival up or down? Dread is a cold skeleton. Gravity's pull dictates the path. death roils my world. Its avalanche is all I see. Voices tumble, screaming, mourning. Save me, blinded by dust of the destroyed. Gathered, we descend, step by step, like lemmings. We move downwards, one step, another, another, towards hell. Up, up, voices call. Go down, of his cry. Can't climb, no strength. Staggering, descending, gasping survivors in single file. Walls shake, staircase trembles, the world is crumbling. Countless steps, coughing, crying. Older woman falls, choking. She is lifted. We continue, becoming each other's brothers, each other's sisters. Strangers engaged in bloody survival, swallowed by noise, enveloped by white knuckle fear grips throats, hands clutch advances, slipping, costumed in powdered gray face, streaking red, small wounds. Time ceases, freezes, and flows like rapids, insane white water, temporal flow undulating, snake-like bedding its skin. Passing doors which won't open. Voices scream from the other side, help me. I'm trapped, muffled, indistinct. They are already dead. We continue, like autumn's fire red leaves fluttering slowly to the ground. Flame sucks at us, black smoke fills our lungs. We are like bags ready to lift from the heat. Stones preparing to fall. Barely visible, first responders approach from below, passing us as they ascend, masked and helmeted firemen, climbing towards death. The looks in their eyes, knowing they may never come back, yet they march upwards, laden with heavy equipment. Four. Four. A band of brothers fighting a different war, no less deadly. Sacred duty is their common calling. Eyes squint as daylight grows. Voices call faster, faster, bursting into haloed brilliance. Running, stumbling, herded towards safety. Behind us, death rains from the sky. Bodies fall, ugly impacts, sticking, flesh and bones. Suddenly, thunder peals. Day turns to night, like a cloudburst. And towers fall. And poet.
Well, Laurent, this touched me very deeply because, you know, these are images that we can't forget and that we were glued to the television or glued to it because we were actually there if we weren't a responder or a victim. This is very detailed. And, you know, especially the part where, you know, your second to last stanza about the ugly impacts. The sound, the fire, metal burning, things collapsing, smoke everywhere, people screaming. This is a tribute to not only the victims, but it also is to the responders who responded to this horrible thing. And even though it's been 22 years, it still feels like yesterday. Thank you, Laurent. And Katie, would you like to comment?
Oh, my goodness me, Laurent. That really was an amazing tribute. Flip. Ooh, I can understand the pain that everybody must have felt at that time. And to think it's 22 years, it's just impossible to think that amount of time's gone past. Oh, well, well done. I take my cap off to you if I had one. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you so much, Katie, and for your emotional comment. It was beautiful. And Bill? I would like to hear your comment on the last poem.
Sure. You were talking earlier about the power of the images that come across. But for me, this transcends all concepts of the power of visuals. And as was just said, that it's a tribute to the first responders and the victims. For me, this is also a tribute to just humanity, because if you think about all the crazy things that go on in the world today and how terrible people can be, we are also the only species that would run into a burning building to try and save someone we don't even know. That's something that we don't think about with everything that goes on with people. And Laura has so amazingly captured the sacrifice and bravery in that, and put forward the whole idea, how we so often think of hell as something that we go down into. But in this case, they were walking up to hell. And I've been watching some of the documentaries that they've been trying to shove down our throats for the last few days. And these firefighters, they knew when they were going up that they only probably had so much time. And some of them are carrying up to 70, 80 pounds of equipment as they're trudging up these stairs, and knowing that it's going to take them 3 to 4 minutes to get up from one floor to the next. And when they're trying to get up above the 8th floor for the people that were trapped there, and the stairwell was gone. And so with all that weight they carried, they knew they probably weren't going to live, and they went anyway. So your lines about the crawling up and being a band of brothers, and that's so true, because something when you're in the foxhole with somebody, you become friends fast. And there was these other references that he made, and it wasn't just the first responders. I mean, just the victims alone of having being in the space together, screaming for help. I watched a video last night of this one woman who had managed to get on her cell phone, and she had called some kind of 911 operator. And the 911 operator was trying to tell the fireman where to go, and this woman knew she was going to die, but she's on the phone, but didn't want to die alone, so she just wanted to have those few minutes with the operator. It's just so tragic. And Blanc, I'm so mad at you, because whatever pleasantry I had today, whatever pleasantry I had tonight has been ruined. Totally, you're the buzzkill of the highest order. Thank you for ruining my day with the powerful emotions that you come across in this verse.
Well, look, first of all, I want to thank you very much for the compliment. I had a short aside. I was also asked to read this at a 9/11 ceremony, which I attended this morning, which was a real pleasure in testimony. And you have to understand, this is Luya's show. She's about to pick up the mood, so 5 minutes from now, the sadness will be forgotten, and we'll all be giggling right alongside her.
Thank you, Laurent. And thank you for such a wonderful tribute and remembrance to the victims and the responders. And we're back to you, Katie, and we're ready to start our front page reading.
Okay, my darling, we have Way Back Home by Stelina, and that has a SoundCloud, I believe.
Okay. Yes, it does, and let me go pick it up, and here we go.
I stalk the night, looking for a fight. Vengeance is my goal. For I've been used, cruelly abused. Pure rage is in my soul. There's a fire in me, which yearns to be free. Screaming blood and hate. The the more I kill, the more blood I spill. It never seems to abate. Men sent from hell with nobody to tell, and no one who even cared. Though some would plead, I had a gnawing need, no single one I spared. Some would cry about wives and beg for their lives. Some would curse, some spit. Didn't give a hoot, I'd pull the trigger and shoot, notch up another hit. Then got in the car, dumped their bodies afar, singing, drunk and stoned. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. Still nobody to tell, turning the preacher away at the door. The one question I said, before I am dead, what was I born for? He looked me in the eye, said, child, you're gonna die. Don't you wanna be forgiven? Well, I've had my spree, so guess now I'll be free, 'cause I never had much living. Since I was a child, I've had to run wild. All I've known is depravity and shame. From 12 or a little more, used as a whore in men's seedy little game. No child should see the things I've seen, or be the things I've been. Sorry won't suffice, have to pay a high price. Ain't nothing can wash my hands clean. Padre, guess you can tell I'm going to hell. No place for you in that pleasure dome. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home.
Oh, I have got to say, not only did she pick the right music, but she picked the right lines and words to this poem that she wrote for Rexy. You know, what I loved about this was that you could see this imagery, and you can, you know, like I said, revenge can be so sweet. And, you know, she brings out towards the end why she is this way. Since I was a child, I've had to run wild. All I've known is depravity and shame. From 12 or little more, used as a whore in men's seedy little game. No child should see the things I've seen or be the things I've been. Sorry won't suffice. Have to pay a high price. When that revenge just comes around and it's turned around. This was just fabulous. I really thought that she really knocked it, the ball, literally, or the bullet right out of the gun here. Fabulous, Selena. Oh, my goodness. I really enjoyed this. What did you think, Katie?
Oh, blimey. Oh, what can I say? That was absolutely wonderful.
Oh, good.
Selena. Oh, I loved it. I love her accent, too. And she sounded so mean. I like a mean woman. I like me a mean woman. Oh, I thought you did wonderfully. Selena, thank you so much for that. You kind of made me feel that sort of warm glow inside of something done really well. So thank you, my dear.
I agree. Thank you so much. And Laurent, I would love to know what you thought of Selena's recording and poem.
May I say, wow. Her voice.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you can.
Incredibly. Hey, come on now. Come on. Say a word edgewise here. Her voice is incredibly seductive. Uh-huh. Yeah, it sings of blood and killing. At the same time, the effect of killing and mesmerizing all at once. It expresses vulnerabilities and demons, real or fanciful, in a way that makes it the spine of this wonderful structure, if I can call it that. And it is. The music is hypnotic. The beat, it seems to mirror mine. Therefore, the effect is really very, very strong. And it's the kind of thing I'd love to listen to over and over again, honestly.
Thank you. Wonderful comments. And Bill, what did you think of Selena's song?
Well, I didn't know she was such a vixen, and I have to wonder about her now. Sometimes you can read something, and it just automatically knocks you out of your chair and transports you somewhere. And as I was listening to this, I could see myself sitting in a little smoky jazz bar on a stool having a drink and the smoke in the air, and she's on a stage and a little red gel light shining on her, and this, you know, little jazz bar. That's what it's like. And it's just so powerful. And there's this one line that is just repeated through it, which is masterful and sticks with you. There's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. I find Banana Boy pretty good, but there's nothing like a trail of blood to find your way back home. And it's interesting, too, how this whole thing evolves, because you can see the progression from a child to an adulthood. And it begins with all the references of Ding Dong, asking the preacher, before I'm dead, let me know what I was born for, and how the things that was seen by the child that no child should ever see had this impact. So there's a really cool, I want to say transgression, but maybe that's, there probably were transgressions, but I really mean to use the word transitions, that transition of transgression that led to this bloodlust. It had such an ominous feeling to it throughout the whole thing. Selena, I told her last time we communicated I wanted to lick her toes. And that's fine. But this is great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we are now ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
All right. And next we have, here we are, Resilient Are Us Women. Resilient Are Us Women by Jenny the Deep. Now, I will give this a read just to save your voice for the commenting.
Okay, sweetheart.
Okay, no problem. Right, so pulling that verbal metallic ivory-encrusted trigger, she ends the war between men and women. Battle of the sexes going on for ages, now over. With the whip of her tongue, she humbled men. All women are praised, heroes with no names. Some are law enforcement stopping a bank robber. Others are fire chiefs trained at putting out flames. Dreams of many, ignored by gender, but has honour. Heroes come in all shapes and sizes. Moms who raise respectable children. Daughters who help their mom in disguises. Women not heeding credit or instant gratification. Females are stronger than some fail to realise. It takes bravery and resilience to get up again. We help fight back against inequality, gender bias, proving time and again we can do what men can. Scratching and clawing of the real bad guy, females doing everything in this world to survive. We are women, rough and tough, we roar. As a sisterhood, stand as one. No help if we lie. End poem.
Fabulous read, Katie, and what a fantastic tribute to women that serve in the military or in the police force. Enforcement. This was, I enjoyed this so much. I really loved the photograph that she puts up, and one of the things that I really liked about here is that females are stronger than some fail to realize. It takes bravery and resilience to equality, gender bias, proving time and again we can do what men can. I think that no matter what job or position that you want,
if you are able and capable to do it, regardless of your gender, you should be allowed that opportunity to prove yourself. Excellent poem, Jenny. Wonderful read. What did you think about the poem, Laurent?
Well, it's a wonderful tribute, certainly. And, you know, I find myself of two minds. On the one hand, everything she says is absolutely true. And more so, I've run into women who do more than humble men with a whip of the tongue, but with performance, with showing that, as she says, she ends the war between men and women with a whip of her tongue. She humbles men, citing the things, the accomplishments. Physically and mentally, women are certainly equal for all men. I think that's been proved over and over again. The true strength lies in not being able to engage in something you might want to, but engage in something you have to, like raising respectable children. Women not needing credit or instant gratification, that they have chosen to serve, so to speak, humanity in that way. But the full equality of women is a wonderful thing to see and not yet realized, but around the corner in this poem does everything it can to show us the truth in that.
Wonderful comment. Thank you so much, Laurent. And what did you think about the poem, Bill? Jenny's poem?
Yes. Awesome job, Jenny. I'm just old enough to remember the old Helen Reddy song, "I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar." I don't know if anyone's familiar with that these days, but that theme of that song goes so well with this. And the other thing that came to my mind, why this resonates so much, I was raised by a single working mother who remains the smartest, hardest working woman I know. I hope no one ever tells my girlfriend I said that. If they did, I'd deny it. But my mother is the hardest, smartest woman I know. And, it is true that one of the interesting things Jenny brings up is that about how heroes come in all shapes and sizes, and that how daughters sometimes help in disguises. And they do their work and will do it quietly. They don't need credit or instant gratification. They're not braggadocious about it. They just do what needs to be done. And I think that's really cool. Beth got mentioned that too. It's not just about the equality aspect of it, but it's not just that they can do the work, it's the way they do the work they do. And it has a quieter kind of strength that isn't caught up in arrogance and loud shouting, "Look at me, look at me, look at what I did, blah, blah, blah," that kind of thing.
I was raised by my mother, four kids, and she's tiny little old thing, just 4'10", my little mamacita. And I love her so much for that, because everything that went, in her life and the things that happened to her, she survived, and she taught us to survive. So I want to thank her for that. Thank you, Bill. And Kay, you read her poem. I would love to know your thoughts.
Oh, I thought it was a brilliant poem, definitely. And it brought up all the different things that women can do and will do. I think it's wonderful. As Bill said, and I'll quote Bill here, "I am old enough to remember when..."
Ready?
No, funny enough, not. I had to fight with the union to get equal pay for women, because I was doing the same job as a man and I was getting paid half his wage. So I've gone through that battle. I've gone through that trying for equality. And we're still trying for equality. We're never going to get there, but we're still trying. Yeah, so well done. Well done. I liked that a lot, Jenny. Thank you.
Thank you. And wow, you're a little tiger. Ready for our next poem, sweetheart?
Okay, here it is. It's this has got a SoundCloud.
Ooh.
It's "In a House of Pain" by Arcana Amor.
Okay, and I am looking for it. Oh, he has such a gorgeous voice, and his music, just like Selena's. Here we go.
"In a House of Pain" She watched me fall from scarlet skies, drowning in the purgatory of her embrace. Night was her plaything of eternal torture, poured from lost memories of dead desires. Her lips inject poison with venomous smiles, haunting my silence with deafening disdain, tearing down walls of a crumbling heaven. Cold glass eyes pierced sinking serenity, drowned in contempt by liquid languor, spewing razor words on a twisted tongue, in walls that rage inside imagination, to scar her world with fallen fantasies, in lands of regret that speak in secrets, hidden behind veils of fractured disguise. Her love ebbed away in melting moments that softly cascaded on forgotten fields, to nurture reality's crippled delusions, as empathy fades across an empty horizon. Closeness slept on a lonely pillow, delivering dreams to weeping rainbows, seeking solace inside bottled tornadoes. Passion begged please to smear her lips among forlorn fits of needful notions, craving comfort from shattered shadows. Now, all that's left is the dust of despair that blows bereft in a winter wilderness. Echoes of reason drift distant whispers of bleeding wounds from sad temptations, endlessly enduring a deluge of derision, dwelling with sorrow in a house of pain.
Oh my gosh, Arcana, you could just feel the painful emotions of a relationship that, you know, has gone so wrong, especially with your opening stanza. You know, but the third one, and let me see where, right here, where, you know, I'm sure at one time or another, one of us has felt this, in lands of regret that speak in secret, hidden behind veils of fractured skies, her love ebbed away in melting moments, though softly cascaded on forgotten fields to nurture reality's crippled delusions. An empathy fades across an empty horizon. You know, that emptiness that you feel when you're so deeply in love with somebody and you realize that your relationship is nothing but clouds of mist and, like he puts here, crippled delusions, you know, that torture that you feel, you know, where sometimes, you know, later we like beat ourselves up, you know, because we'll go, well, why couldn't I see this? You know, it was there, but of course, when you love somebody, you love them, and, you know, you don't want to see those crippling delusions that are just cutting your soul. This is painful. is beautifully written. Congratulations on your medal and also on your front page pick on the House of Pain. Oh, my goodness. What did you think, Katie?
Yes, there was some amount of emotion. My goodness me. My particular, you actually mentioned the stanza that I was thinking of. So great minds think alike here. But I also very much liked, night was her plaything of eternal torture, poured from lost memories of dead desires. Her lips inject poison with venomous smiles, haunting my silence with deafening disdain. That last line, haunting my silence with deafening disdain. That's such a slap in the face, isn't it? You're not even worth thinking about. Yes, go already. No, I thought it was wonderful, as usual, naturally, what we expect. But I love the music as well. That was really well done. So thank you, Arcana. That was a total enjoyment.
And I totally agree. And what did you think, Salant?
Where to begin, eh? So many lines that simply speak. Drowning in the purgatory of her embrace, poured from lost memories of dead desires. That's probably one of the salient phrases, because those desires still exist. And you think they're dead, but they're not. Not at all. The memories are there, and her lips ready to inject poison with those venomous smiles of hers. This is aggressively, almost academically, horror. It's a finely tuned piece. It's visionary, and it's mental torture by dead desires and insufficiency captured by the cold glass eye. It echoes of despair, of love lost, sorrowing buried and unearthed in this house of pain.
Agreed. Thank you. Fantastic comment, Ron. And Bill, what did you think about Kenneth's poem?
Yes. Arcana always delivers. He's such an artist of the highest order. And as I look at this, I was trying to get a grasp of what is the mastery that's jumping out of me. And the first thing I'll mention is, you know, and we all might know about this idea of earworms. Things just burrow into our ears and grab hold. And he does that so well with language through these alliterative techniques like deluge of derision, winter wilderness, shattered shadows, forgotten fields, fallen fantasies. So just the play on words is amazing to me, how he masters that. That's one thing, but here's the other thing that's really incredible. If you look at the stanzas, he takes us up to this line, and he could very well stop right there. But instead of stopping, he goes this one step further. And if you only read the first few words of every line, it would make sense in itself. But instead of ending it when he could, he takes the extra step and says, no, let me push this a little bit further. Like, take a look at the last stanza where he says, now all that's left is the dust. It could have ended right there. All that's left is the dust. But what kind of dust is it? He goes on to qualify it. It's the dust of despair. And the sorrow, dwelling with sorrow in that last line, where is the sorrow coming from? It's coming from a house of pain. And there's just almost in every stanza he does this where he, you get the sense of every, and I think this is such a good example for all poets. It's so often that you'll see lines that get, that bleed over into the following line, but, you know, he is this perfect example of how each line can be its own statement and doesn't have to be followed with a run-over sentence. And each line is great. And if you only took the first few words of every line, it would convey what was needed to convey. But instead, he just goes the extra step to, like, I just, this line, delivering dreams to weeping. That puts the idea forth, but he goes a bit further and he says, delivering dreams to weeping what? Weeping rainbows. And that just puts a whole other context on it. It's just masterful. Arcana is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. He's a fantastic, fantastic poet. Okay, we are ready for, and let's keep moving along. We're already almost to the open poetry, but let's go ahead and keep doing our front page picks. Back to you, Katie. Katie? Can everybody hear me?
I'm sorry, that was me.
Oh, no.
I apologize.
Oh, girl,
sorry.
You're getting... Don't scare me, Katie!
I'm sorry. Oh, my goodness, I didn't realize I was on mute. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put that piece of poetry up. Please ignore it. I do apologize. That wasn't what was meant to go up. This is what's meant to go up. Okay, this is
okay.
Back on track. Sorry about that, folks. Slight hiccup. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
That's my nervous giggle. Okay, this is Chorus by Lady Soyud. And Bill, could I ask you to read this for us, please? Oh, we got some Morse code. I love it. Yes, Bill, could you read this, please?
Yes. I'm sorry, are you asking me to read it?
Yes, please.
Okay. I got it right here.
Excellent.
Let me just make sure my screen is right. Okay, this is called How to Wear Red Lipstick by Travelman.
No, I'm sorry, it's not that one. I did say, I'm sorry,
the
but
next
I put
one
that
down.
Up by mistake. It's the next one
oh,
down.
I'm, my bad,
sorry.
I'm sorry.
No, it's me, I'm sorry, I just made a silly mistake. So please ignore that and go to the next one. Thank you. Me. So
it's the Chorus by Lady Soyon?
Yes, that's correct. Thank
okay.
you.
You want me to read that?
If you could, yes, please.
Yes.
Okay, so this is Chorus. And I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, by Lady Soyod.
Yes, that would
okay,
be correct.
Okay, Chorus,
yes.
Begin. A candle flare is not diminished by lighting candles, nor is the moon dimmed by its guiding beams. Stuck in this epoch of fossil fuels, blind to the epic tales of sun rays and waves, civilization is not a lineal progression, but variant cycles that end in cataclysms, self-inflicted or through planetary dynamics. The children of Ra erected temples for Amun, priesthoods for Atan, eternal moments, for the immortal Nile. They had mapped the stars plugged into the source of solar flares. They had mapped the stars plugged into the source of solar flares, surfing the waves of sun rays that glisten upon the ripples in the stream, to whom songbirds chorus hymns at dawn. A burning candle is not diminished by lightning. A burning candle is not diminished by lighting candles, nor the sun that forever recharges. The earth stopped burning the air for energy learned from the ancients. How to harness the reservoirs of heat? Candlelight, candle bright. What is the next scene? I'm sailing to Kemet to kiss the Sphinx. And
thank you, Bill. You did a fabulous read of Lady Soyod's poem. And let's get some comments. What did you think about the poem, Laurent?
Absolutely fascinating. A candle flare is not diminished by lighting candles, nor is the moon dimmed by its guiding beams. It speaks immediately to the energies of light, sunlight and moonlight for that matter. It speaks to those energies and the recognition by the children of Ra that they existed. They had mapped the stars, plugged in the source of solar flares, surfing the waves of sun rays. And then refers, of course, to today, when the sun that forever recharges the earth, stop burning the air for energy learned from the ancients. He goes back in time to this first one of the first major civilizations we're aware of, and brings it forward in a way that I think is stunning, looking at a knowledge that is just now reemerging. It's a brilliant piece. I really do think so.
Mm-hmm. You know, I really liked this entire poem, the Sphinx Guard, in going back, like with Laurent, into ancient history of the Egyptians, that it's brought out here. And I really enjoyed the two stanzas. The children of Ra erected temples for Amun, priesthood for Aton, eternal monuments for the immortal Nile. They had mapped the stars, plugged into the source of solar flares, surfing the waters of sun rays. You know, a lot of these ancient, the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Egyptians, you know, and other civilizations that, you know, their buildings, their monuments are still standing and still being dug up. And everything we have is just like falling apart. And, you know, they learn to live with nature and we are destroying nature. So I really enjoyed this poem. What did you think, Katie? Thank you, Laurent.
Yes. Excuse me. I'm losing my voice. Yes, I thought it was, first of all, the picture. Isn't that amazing? But I loved it. I love the fact that she's got the three line stanzas. I do enjoy that very much. A bit of a change. But I thought it was very well written and so interesting. Stuck in this epoch of fossil fuels, blind to the epic tales of sun's rays and waves. I mean, that's for sure. We are. We don't even think about it. You know, you don't think about the fact that you can actually start a fire with the sun's rays. And if you're stuck, you know, that's a way to do it. But fossil fuels been with us for so long, we tend to not think of anything else. So I thought it was very well written and very interesting. And I do like the Nile.
Agreed.
So thank you for that.
Me too. And the history. Bill, you read this poem. I'd like to know your opinion.
Well, I'm into history. I really love history, and so this pushes a lot of buttons for me because Egypt is such a fascinating place anyway. And he referred to it even in its historical sense because the Egyptians themselves, at the end, he makes a reference to Kemet and sailing to see the Sphinx. I mean, we already know that he's talking about Egypt, but that phrase, Kemet, K-E-M-E-T, that is what the Egyptians call Egypt, and it means the black land. So that's a very historical reference, as well as when he talks about the children of Ra and Amun, you know, Amun-Ra, you know, the sun god, and all the references to the sun. So it's so fraught with so many elements of history that are germane to that incredible culture. And, you know, we so often think about the pyramids. I think more recently we've discovered that they had the ability of light. As much as Thomas Edison gets wrongful credit for inventing the light bulb, we now know that they had these things called Baghdad batteries, and we've seen the hieroglyphics, not really knowing what they are, but the evidence seems to indicate that the Egyptians had the power of light and that they would use that maybe when they were going into the tunnels constructing pyramids, which is, just something else that we don't really understand. We always hear about the pyramids, but there's so many other fascinating elements to that culture. And
they were called some kind of a jar, weren't they? Like Leyden jars or those crude batteries?
Baghdad batteries.
It was another name. But fascinating point.
Thank you, Laurent. And thank you, Bill. And we're ready for our next poem, Miss Katie.
Righty-ho. Next
I'll have to look into that, Laurent. That was very interesting. Sorry, Katie.
That's all right. Well, we have even more interesting, Queen of Egypt by Isama Chiba.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, Laurent, would you care to read this one for us?
I'll be happy to, although I'd love to hear the Booyah voice at some point.
I can try.
You want me to read it, Laurent? I can try.
Go right ahead, Randy. You go right ahead.
Laurent, the only reason I'm reading it is to save Louis's voice for commentating. Obviously, all I was doing, I wasn't trying to speed.
I
know, sweetheart. You know, she's not ignoring me. I can manage to read one, and this is short. I would love to read it because she's a dear friend of mine and a beautiful poet. And thank you, Katie. And thank you, Laurent. Queen of Egypt by Asana Chiba. Sajarat Abdur, Tree of Pearls, a former slave that resided in the harem of Abbasid Caliph, who sent her a gift to the Sultan of Egypt, Al-Salah Ayyub. The Sultan instantly fell in love with her. She became the real power behind the throne, moved out of the shadows after her beloved husband died, took upon herself the title of Sultan, became the first woman to claim an Egyptian throne since Cleopatra, and one of the very few in Islamic history. Depending on her wits and the goodwill of men, regrouped the Maluk army, led them to victory, ended the Seventh Crusade by capturing Louis the Sixth. Stopped the Mongols from conquering the region. Her melodramatic life ended tragically, cornered by her second husband's former wife, beaten to death by slaves of the harem out of jealousy and love, revenge. In poem, and I'm sorry for the misreading. It's kind of hard for me to see. And let's go ahead and get Asana some comments. What did you think about this poem that Asana wrote, Miss Katie?
Oh, beautiful. And you read it very well. It was not an easy one to read at all, but so interesting. I mean, Al-Dur, Tree of Pearls, my goodness, a former slave that resided in the harem. I can never say that word. I thought it was very well, I thought it was very well written and amazingly interesting. You know, you find out all these things that you don't know, which is what I love about this kind of show, that things appear that you've never heard of or you want to look into or you want to find more about. So thank you very much for that very interesting piece of poetry, and it's no wonder it was front page pick.
I agreed. And I really enjoyed this poem very much. She brings out in her author's notes that she reigned from 1200 to 1259. She was the first monarch in Egyptian and Islamic history since Cleopatra in 1250. She was now the reigning woman. She was the wife of As-Salih Ayyub, the Egyptian sultan of Ayyubid dynasty, and later is Aladdin Ayyabak, Egyptian sultan of the Bahri dynasty. The Mamluk dynasty began in 1250 to 1517. And so I wanted to thank her for that. And I made and she also said in her response to me that she had a strong heart, a brilliant mind, and a powerful spirit, and she saved Egypt from great danger. She is a historical hero, celebrated and loved until today. Thank you, Asama, for this beautiful poem that you wrote for in tribute of her. And what did you think, Laurent? Thank you, Katie.
Well, it's a really well-done marriage of history and poetry. And it's a pleasure to see the invading European armies flung back, defeated by a woman of strength and wisdom. Now, her AN is eye-opening, at least to me. I mean, never having heard of a woman and seeing the very important place that she had in world history, it's astonishing. And I'm always appreciative of poetry that not only pleases the eye and the ear, but informs in such a wonderful way. Beautifully done, Asama.
Mm. Agreed. And what did you, thank you, Laurent, and what did you think of the poem, Bill?
Well, I feel like Laurent. I love it when a poem is not only, you know, not only the words, but when you can learn something from reading it. And this is one of, you know, I wasn't familiar with Shahazer before this poem, but while we've been sitting here, I just studied a little bit. And not only was she this incredible ruler, but you want to talk about resilience. This is a girl who in her youth was sold into slavery, passed around until she was purchased. And the man that purchased her went on to become a leader, which then made, and I guess married her, and then put her in a position of power as the, you know, as the significant other of this leader. And you know, through her history, as someone referred earlier, she and her name means tree of pearls, which is why sometimes when you look at her, you'll see this image of a tree with a mother of pearls on it, because that represents her name. And just in terms of how respected this woman was in the history of that region, when they made money, the currency that got printed, there was where they would have the religious figure Manzur Caliph, you know, the caliphs, which are holy, you know, leaders, were printed on the coins. But there were other coins where she is the depicted person on the coin, which is a major, major sign of respect, and that's really cool. That's, you know, I'm gonna be reading more about this fascinating woman that I never knew about, thanks to the writer of this poem, and I'm just grateful to learn something. And that's what comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we're ready for our next poem, sweet Katie.
Okay, my darling, next one coming up. Bear with me a moment. Here we have Afterglow of Love by Fran Marie. And I will read this one. Oh, you're pushed up. You okay, my dear? Sounds terrible. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I am. I just one's about all I can do for right now, but at least it's one, so I'm happy to read.
Of course, my darling, not a problem. Right,
thank
so
you, sweetheart, and I love to hear you read, though.
Thank you. I'm going to read this one because it's an adult one. It should be fun. So this is Afterglow of Love by Fran Marie. The music of the muses stir strings of enchantment, dulcet-toned flame desire, softly in a concerto caress. A sweet sonata pleads for passion play as our heated movements match in harmony, each nuance of sexuality beating breathlessly to a violin's vibration. Musical themes wrap us in amber's warm embrace. Let me love you, take any amount of given space, step inside my boudoir fair. My shameless seat breathes risque schemes there. O play for me on angel wings ascending. O stay with me, the erotic moon descending. With music muses lending, reaching a high crescendo ending, basking in the afterglow of love. End poem.
You did such a beautiful, soft, sensual read of Fran. I really enjoyed hearing you read, Katie. And, oh, this was such a gorgeous poem to read for. Let's go ahead and start getting some comments. Laurent, I'd like to hear what you think.
It was passionate and lyrically beautiful. I was especially struck by that last song, the, Oh, Play For Me Your Melody, on angel wings ascending. Oh, stay with me, erotic moon descending, with music muses lending, reaching a high crescendo, ending, asking in the afterglow of love. You went A, B, C, B, 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 D. That is a great, I love the rhythm that it creates. Bravo.
Agreed. I wish everybody could see this beautiful artwork that she has written to. For me, I loved, absolutely loved that second stanza. A sweet sonata pleads for passion play as our heated movements match in harmony. Each nuance of sexuality beating breathlessly to a violin vibration. You know, being a string player, you feel the emotions in your bowing and holding the instrument close to your body. It's like, you know, it's a caress. And then also where she talks about the violin vibration, where you vibrate your fingers, and it, to me, it's like when you're really in love and you touch the person that you love, the electricity that you feel from your fingertips. And it's the same thing when you're doing vibrato. And I just thought that she penned that stanza so gorgeously. I enjoyed it so much, Fran. And I love the way Katie read it. I would like to know what you thought about the poem, Bill.
Okay, be careful. All right. My first thought is, I think it would be so cool if I could get you, Lou, or Katie to say it again, but real slow. No, that's fine. It's so awesome and amorous, and I think you used the word earlier, sensual, the sensuality in this. It's really turns me on. And I'm just thinking, we started with 9/11, and now we have this really sexiness, and thank you for taking me to another place, but it's so damn lonely. I don't want to think about it. Anyway, how cool is it that there's all these references to sex and sexuality, but it doesn't have to include any references to anatomy, and it's just so classy. It's so classy the way this is done. That's what comes to my mind. And it's beautiful. It really turns me on. Unfortunately, I got nothing to do with that, but it's just great.
Thank you.
Are you shitting me?
Thank you, Bill.
Oops.
Oh, boy. We got some juicy men on tonight. And Katie, I would love to know what you thought of Fran's poem that you just beautifully read.
Oh, that was a delight to read. That was so good. I really enjoyed it. You can tell when I didn't get the cadence right. I do apologize for that. It's
Oh,
thank you. It's just quite difficult going in for the first read. And it was so well written that I was annoyed at myself for not doing it justice. But beautiful. Loved it. Thank you. I really loved it. I loved
it. Well,
that.
You heard Bill said he would love to hear you read it one more time. Kind of reminded me of Glay.
Read it one more time slowly. Oh, I could do that.
No,
I can't do anything slowly. I love this. Let me love you. Take any amount of given space. Step inside my boudoir fair. My shameless seat breathes risque schemes there. I like that so much. That just so many ideas pop into your mind, don't they, when you hear words like that. So, Bill, I can totally understand. We all feel the same way sometimes, and that's one of those times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, beautifully done. I thought she did a wonderful job. Afterglow of love.
She did.
It was just perfect. Yeah, beautiful, Fran. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we are now ready for our next poem before we go into open poetry.
Is it that time,
Bill? Bill, if you would like to put a poem up in the open poetry section, you're more than welcome. or you can just continue to help us read and comment. It's up to you.
I'm telling you the truth. I'm not sure where I would find those selections you just referred to.
It's not in the messages section. You put it in the topic board. Is there a poem that you would title? Here, let me send. I'll message it to you. And while you're looking for one, let's go ahead and keep
reading. One called Garden of Enlightenment.
Yeah, that's where you put it. That's where you put your poem link. Okay,
I see
Katie.
One you wrote, Lou. How about I pull that up?
No, it's you just add it to there. I'll send you the link, Bill. I'll private message it to you. And while you get the link and look for a poem to add it. Or if you need help, you can just let me know. Katie, go ahead and add another poem so we can get some more poems read.
Yep. We have Canadian Memories, Four Seasons of Childhood by L.G. Mace. And Laurent, would you give this a read for us, please?
Gladly. Gladly. I haven't seen L.G. in a while. Excuse me. Canadian Memories, Four Seasons of Childhood. I grew up in Bear Repair, Quebec, Canada, a beautiful place in time. I remember fall, the changing leaves, especially the crimson scarlet of the magnificent Canadian maple, the sound of the honkers migrating south, breaking up piles of leaves to scatter, who gleefully jumped into their decks, sledding, skating, and hockey, bringing hot loads of marshmallows in winter, searching for birds' nests to add to our egg collections, the turquoise of the red-breasted robin taking the prize, pussy willows, daffodils, and pollywogs in spring, in summer finding our own special watering hole, and a tremendous giant tree with rope and an old car tire to swing from. These are my treasured memories of my childhood and the Four Seasons and Bear Repair and poem.
You did a fabulous read of LG's poem. I really loved her imagery in here. It was so rich. And Katie, I'm going to ask you to comment first. What did you think?
Sorry, I just took myself off mute there. Oh, I thought it was wonderful. Canadian Memories, Four Seasons of Childhood, my goodness. And that whole laying out of a life of, you know, the pursuits, the things they did, sounds wonderful. You wouldn't think that being in the snow and the cold could be so much fun, but it certainly was. Beautifully. Beautifully done. I love it. These are my treasured memories of my childhood and the Four Seasons in Bear Pear. Lovely. I don't even know if I said that correctly, but it's beautiful. So thank you very much for that. I enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoyed, I have got to say, when I heard of Laurent read this, which she did such a fabulous job, it just made me smile. I'm still smiling when I heard him read this. The sound of the honkers migrating south, raking up piles of leaves. You know, I just love that imagery, and it was just something, the way Laurent read it just tickled me. And then the rich colors, you know, the things, the turquoise of red-breasted robin taking the prize, pussy willows, daffodils, and pollywogs in spring. You know, it was just absolutely stunning and gorgeous. I really enjoyed this. It was one of my favorite poems of LG's. She said this has to do with her childhood memories and nature, and I loved it. What did you think about the poem that you just read, Laurent?
Well, I echo your sentiments. They were some of the most beautiful memories. Not my memories, certainly. But especially little touches, like the line you quoted, I believe, the crimson scarlet of the magnificent Canadian maple, the sound of honkers migrating south, the raking up of the leaves, the sledding, the skating, the hockey, the description of the turquoise egg, and what was in the water, the pussy willows, daffodils, and pollywogs. Pollywog is a wonderful word, isn't it? You can have fun with it. Pollywog. All in all, great little piece.
I agree, and I, like I said, I really enjoy listening to you read it. Honkers. I haven't heard that word in a long time, but we don't have honkers.
Yeah. We don't have them down here. We got honkers everywhere. We got honkers.
And I enjoyed that so much. What a beautiful childhood moment. What did you think, Bill?
Well, I should preface this by saying I have family from Quebec. And I know I want to send this to them because I know they would love it. And I like how in the fourth line it makes reference to the sound of the honkers. I grew up in an area where the Canadian geese were so prevalent, people would come from all over the world to hunt at the wintertime. And you know, the Canadian geese are a big thing in Kentucky. So the references to their migration habits is really powerful, and all the different references to life in Quebec is really cool. And it's one of those pieces that just takes you to a place. It's so different from Egypt, where we went. We've gone from Egypt, from the Twin Towers at 9/11, and now we're going to Canada. You're taking us all over the world tonight, will you?
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much for a wonderful comment. And Miss Katie, we are ready for our next poem.
Oh, right. And next we're going into open poetry. And we have Seductive Step by Poetic Picasso. And I think we have a SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm. Let me get that. Here we go.
Baby, I love the way you look, the way you move up those stairs with a seductive stare. You wink at me a sensual stare, in smile, exuding your feminine appeal. Dressed in a silky sable dress, capturing the beauty of your voluptuous contours. Your sexy legs drive me crazy, with those nylon stockings in high heels. I follow you up the staircase, accepting your passionate invitation. I am swooned by the irresistible aroma of your exquisite perfume in the romantic echoes of your mellifluous voice, enticing me with the tender rose petals of your lust. Lips. Your exotic eyes reflect a pearly luster of your exploring eroticism. Your hips are yearning to release the desires of my untamed beast, to feel the manly grip of an impassioned bull aroused. Sip slowly from the taste of Spanish wine off my bare chest. I want to unveil the hidden pleasures of your wild fantasies. Be the Latin lover that drenches you in the wet drops of my flesh, embracing you with my arms in the dew of my kiss. To the moonlight evokes the sultry shivers of our escapade. Eres la mujer que seduce con su mirada, la amante que provoca mi pasión, ese cuerpo que me hipnotiza siempre. Eres el sabor de las gotas empapando de mi ser. You are the woman who seduces with her gaze, the lover who provokes my passion, that body that always hypnotizes me. You are the tale of the dripping drops of my glass. Olay. Olay.
Well, I don't know if my heavy breathing is from my cough or it's from listening to Fright Club. Oh, my goodness. Tell you, his stand is just pack a powerful, sensual thrust, whatever. I'm swooned by the irresistible aroma of your exquisite perfume and the romantic echoes of your melodious voice, enticing me with the tender rose petals of your lustful lips. Your exotic eyes reflect the pearly luster of your exploring eroticism. Ooh, when you know what you want, oh my goodness, que caliente! Ah, you never disappoint us, Mike. And what did you think about his poem, Miss Katie?
Well, I'm not so much the miss anymore after that. Oh, my goodness me. Your hips are yearning to release the desires of my untamed beast. Oh, hello. Come to me, big boy. So bad. You are so bad, Frank. But I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Beautifully done. I loved it. You sip slowly from the taste Spanish wine off my bare chest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're getting interesting now. I thought it was as usual. Every stanza, as you say, Luyu, is a delight. I don't know how you do it, but you do it, and you do it very well. So thank you so
mm-hmm.
much.
Oh yes, he does it very well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Marat, I would love to know what you think.
Oh, really? All right. Here's what I think.
Oh, yes, I do.
I think that Frank.
Yes, I do.
I think that Frank is good. I think that Frank is possibly the only man who's ever made me wish that I was a woman, so I can enjoy the poem in the same way that you guys seem to enjoy it. I'll tell you what. It made me drop trowel, as God is my witness, as I stand here before you, made me drop trowel and think about it, but I'm too attached, so I'll forego that pleasure and simply express my admiration for the taste of the dripping drops of my thirst. Olay, olay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laurent. I really enjoyed your comment. And Bill, I'd like to know your comment also.
Okay. Well, I'm sitting here wondering, am I supposed to be wearing my pants?
Well, none of us can tell on this end if you are or
yes,
not.
I guess. And, first thing is I was listening to the tone of his voice and his intimations. It is so reminiscent of Tom Waits. I don't know if you all are familiar with his music or style. But it makes me wonder if the writer is familiar with Tom Waits, because there's such similarity between the sound and the style, which is really cool. But the other thing that jumped out at me, and it's not a criticism really, but it's just the difference between when a man writes stuff like this versus a woman. Because earlier we had something that was very sensual, and it was being compared to the playing of music, the sonata. And now in this verse, which is also very sensual, but it gets right to the point, we're not talking about music. We're talking about lips, hips, and an untamed beast. But we know what that is. But buddy, you need to get that under control. You're going to get in trouble. I just think the physicality and the references just shows the difference between the way a man approaches these things, which tend to be very surface sometimes. It's about appearances and surface level things, whereas a woman will get into sort of the underlying elements and compare these things to nature and music and things that are is beautiful without having to focus on the on an untamed beast or hips that are waiting to release something. Just find, you know,
it could have been her swinging. It was
a man's approach.
It was her
woman's. Just
yeah.
You know, I'm not a prude, so I just find that interesting.
Yeah, it was her
and
hips that were
back on.
That were moving up the stairs. So. It, you know, with the picture, it's her hips moving up the stairs, and he did that. So hips don't lie. You know, we know that Spanish song by, oh, my goodness, I just now forgot her name. Begins with the S. But anyway, she's
Shakira.
One of my favorite singers, and Kara, yeah.
Shakira.
So hips don't lie. You got it. Thank you, Bill. Okay, Miss Katie, we're ready for our next poem.
Okay, next we have Never Leave.
Ooh, Naomi.
Hi, Naomi. Okay, I think I will read this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I will. I will. So this is, and I hope I do you justice, Naomi, because your writing is beautiful. So Never Leave by Naomi Sarah. Upon the sand, the rain is almost silent, softer than the patter on a rooftop, coating the hue of spilled cream in ears of ripened corn. Seagulls ride with the wind as sunset flashes pink and orange and purple, mirroring the colors of a flawless seasoned apricot. The sun's face curls under the fiery fingertips of hovering clouds as I melt softly into the coastline, into the salty ocean breeze, sweeping my stress, carrying it out to sea. The imprints of my feet are washed away by the white crested waves rolling in, like the heaviness carried upon my broken back, as blackness slowly dumps like oil into the ebbing tide of Riparian blue. The pulsating drum of the waves hitting the shore, an ancient alchemy of purr and pound, uncoiling like an old vellum parchment, the script whispering out to me just two words, a thousand times over, never leave. End poem.
Oh my goodness, we have such beautiful emotive poetry tonight. That deeply moved me, and you read that so beautifully for Naomi. What did you think about this poem, Murat?
There's nothing but excellence tonight. Good Lord. I'm kind of taken aback by how good a lot of this poetry is. Oh, I don't know why I should be. The sun's face curls under the fiery fingertips of hovering clouds as I melt softly into the coastline, into the salty ocean breeze, sweeping my stress, carrying it out to sea. How lyrical her writing is at this point. It's imagery with an effortless grace. And I'll read again this bit. The pulsating drum of the waves hitting the shore, an ancient alchemy of purr and pound. That's genius. Uncoiling like an old vellum parchment, the script whispering out to me just two words a thousand times over, never leave. When we imagine the waves pounding on the shore, they pound continually. They never stop. It's sometimes they're smaller, sometimes larger, but they never stop day after day, year after year. It says the same thing, never leave, and that is so evocative in terms of time span. It's a very powerful piece.
Agreed, and such a wonderful comment. You know, when I heard Katie reading this, I could hear Naomi's voice. And, you know, she talks about, you know, how this releases the stress, you know, and she, like it says right here,
the imprints of my feet are washed away by the white, crusted, weedy rolling in, like the heaviness carried upon my broken back. As the blackness slowly dumps like oil into the ebbing tide, the riparian blue, you know, when we carry stress and pain and agony, for me, it's when I'm in nature. You know, we don't live anywhere near any sea or coastlines where I live, you know, but we have mountains. And, you know, I find my peace when I bike ride into the Apache Mountains, and I'm just surrounded by the trees and the clouds and the scent and the meadows with the flowers. All the pain, all the agony, all the stress, all the brokenness, like Naomi brings up here, my broken back, the energy that I feel, the healing of nature. And I thought she caught that so beautifully. This was a gorgeous, gorgeous poem. And I would like to know what you thought about the poem, Bill.
Well, again, it's just another magical, colorful work from Naomi. I've read so much stuff of hers, and it's always so brilliant. I think right from the beginning we get this sense, because she talks about the fact that it's raining. She's on the sand, and even though it's raining, the rain is almost silent. And I think it's silent because of the visual impact of all of these other things. The rain can't get in the way of all this beauty, which we see that, we're introduced to that in the second stanza, the flashing of the sunset, the pink and orange and purple. But the other thing is she's not just describing the color. She goes on to say how this mirrors, you know, the flawless seasoned apricot. And so now we're making this connection between something we see but something sweet we can taste. I think that's really neat. One thing I've been trying to figure out as I listen to this, at the very last stanza, it says that there's these two words that are repeating over and over, never leave, never leave. On the other side of that is stay. And as I think about stay instead of never leave, it makes me wonder what is being asked to stay. At first I thought this is something like an imagining of another person or a relationship. Now I'm beginning to think it's the magic of the moment. And it's so magical that, you know, she sees her feet, her imprint of her feet in the sand, which is an affirmation of the fact of I am present in this moment, and I've got proof of it in these two feet the shape of my footprints that are here in the sand. I can see them, so it validates that I'm here in this moment. But then the water carries that imprint away. So all of the recognition of you being in that moment is sort of taken away, and you're seeing all this beauty and sitting in it. And why wouldn't you want to stay? And so I'm wondering, is this repeating of words 1,000 times over said, she writes, is never leave? I think it might be the writer saying, I never need to leave the space. I need to stay here. And as if the writer was speaking to themselves, which I think may be the case, and that gives it a little bit of a different context.
Well, and it also could mean the memories that she's carrying with her on that beach. You know, it could be both, and you're absolutely right. And Naomi, you did such a beautiful read of Naomi's poem. I would like to know your thoughts on it.
It was a pleasure, an absolute pleasure to read, as always, as I would expect. But my bestest favorite stanza, the sun's face curls under the fiery fingertips of hovering clouds as I melt softly into the coastline, into the salty ocean breeze, sweeping my stress, carrying it out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is just, you know, I mean, let's face it, from the sea we came and to the sea we return, and it always has that same effect. It calms and it makes you feel better. The salty ocean breeze makes your lungs open and you breathe deeply, and the sound of the ocean is absolutely wonderful. I sail a lot. I used to sail an awful lot more, but I sail a lot, and I love the sea. And it's so good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Immerse yourself in the sea, and you'll feel 100% better. So, Naomi, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Nice comment, Katie. Nice comment.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, agreed. Thank you. And we're ready for our next poem, sweetheart.
Okie doke. And the next one we have...
You might have to refresh...
No,
refresh
I've got it.
Your page, because... Okay, great. Thank you.
It's all right. Blood for the Baby by Bill Schiller. I wonder if you'd like to read this for us, please, Bill.
Sure, I got it. Let me just get my screen set here. Yeah, this is called Blood for the Baby. And it goes like this. Villainous, vicious, vexing victimization. An unarmed black woman with the unborn baby. Termination. Another assault from cops lacking justification. Wrongfully accused of shoplifting from Kroger's store. Ohio cops ordered pregnant woman to open the car door. From parking lot, Takiyah Young, age 21, proclaimed innocence. Police shot through windshield as she moved her car only inches. In only 3 years, 135 dead shot. Bloodlust of white officers transition to killer cops. None can say when nor how the violence will stop. Martin Floyd, Taylor Foster Lawson, Hall, bullets didn't miss. Add Takiyah Young and her unborn child now to the fatal list. A mother of two. Other kids is dead, body cameras is witness, broken vows to protect and serve as true justice is missed. Blamed killer cops deserve worse than administrative leave. Gathered by graves, the families collectively grieve. Cops now invited for hire with pay increases. In Florida, they're requested for adding to offenses. It's all part of leadership by Governor Ron DeSantis. And I sometimes get grief over, I am a law enforcement supporter and in my career have had to work very closely with police departments and fire departments around the world. And that's just real. So they command a lot of respect for me. And at the same time, as much as I love most cops, a wrong is a wrong. And when I see an unarmed person, white or black, get shot down, and in this case, a pregnant woman who was unarmed and misaccused of shoplifting, just recently, I remember another situation where a woman and her child went into a Dollar General store. The little girl apparently tried to shoplift some Barbie doll that is sold for $3 or $4 at the Dollar General store, and the cops surround this woman and pull a gun out on her and her daughter. And this is just crazy to me. As much as I respect law enforcement, I moved to Florida because of some work I was doing with the CIA. And before that, I did work with the deputy director of the FBI. I've worked with fire departments and police stations all around the country. And I love those guys, but a wrong is a wrong. And I think they need to be called out when a wrong occurs. And when I saw this story in the news, it just made me sick. I've seen too much of it. And I'm not kidding. Here in Florida, they have been asked, if you are a cop who's been implicated in any of these crimes and the murder or the killing of an unarmed black person, the government here has said, please come to Florida. You're not only welcome here, we're going to give you a pay increase. And I think, what is the insanity of that? So this writing is a response to some of the things I feel. There's a phrase called zeitgeist. It's a word that means the spirit of the times. And for me, a lot of the stuff I write is of, you know, the zeitgeist, and it's my way of trying to cope with the insanity I see. And that's where this poem came from.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Bill. You know, unfortunately, that problem is—it's not just happening there; it's happening everywhere. And you know, for all our law enforcement, you know, I want to thank the police officers and the Border Patrol and all of those who follow the law and keep us safe. But just like with every job, there's bad cooks, there's bad doctors, there's bad cops. You know, there's, you know, many different jobs where jobs are done dangerously and badly and people die. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know how we're going to root out that problem because it's mostly dipped in discrimination. You know, I've had problems. And, you know, it really hurts me to see innocent people, you know, but we also, you know, when something bad happens in our lives and a crime is being committed, who do we call? We call the police to come and help us. So we want to thank all law enforcement who are kind and loving and follow the law. And like Bill was bringing out, there's a lot of bad law, forces of law that take the law into their own hands. And unfortunately, that does happen. And thank you for that. So we have a new caller, caller 352. Who am I speaking with?
Greetings in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. My name is Pastor Don Green, CEO. I'm a first-time caller, but I've been on 1,000 of these radio shows. How are you doing, Night Queen?
Okay, we're doing fine. So give me a second. We're getting some comments on Bill Schiller's poem. What did you think about Bill's poem, Katie?
I found it incredibly interesting. But I live in Scotland, so we don't have that kind of problem here. Our police don't have guns. I cannot imagine what it must feel like to live in a society where you don't know who has a gun and who might or might not pull one on you. I can't even imagine. It would be the most horrible feeling. I would not want to live like that. So they say that they should arm our policemen, and I hope to goodness they never do. Because a big truncheon or whatever will do the trick. You don't have to kill people. So well done, Bill. It was very well written. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Thank you, Katie. And Laurent, I'd like to know your opinion.
Oh, Bill. This is a lusty speaking out against this type of official violence prevalent in so many communities. Suiting is not a light action. I mean, it's to be used as a last resort only. But Rhonda Senseless, great name, sets the stage for this kind of environment that seems to welcome extremes. He is basically a deliberately ill-informed, malevolent force. Nice job.
Thank you so much. And did you get to hear his poem? What did you say your name was again? Caller 352?
Pastor Don Jr., CEO. And I did hear him.
Pastor?
He was actually nice. Pastor Don
you said
Jr., CEO.
After.
Pastor.
After.
P-A-S-T-O-R.
Don Jr.
Don Jr., CEO.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, did you get to hear his poem?
I was very nice. I mean, the assemblies, the metaphors, I love poetry, and it's my first time on the show, so I'm sorry I'm not staying to the status quo, but I'm texting people telling them, hey, we're live, and you're taking calls, so I really enjoy it.
Okay, and just to let you know,
You can find our group on allpoetry.com, and it's free to join. And our group is titled Late Night Poet. That's why you were up, and we have after midnight shows also. So if you look at after allpoetry.com, you can join for free and write poems and join us on the show and let us be able to read your poems and comment on it.
Hey, man, I'm signing up right now.
Okay. All right, Miss Katie from Scotland, we are ready for our next poem.
Okay, we're back to front page picks again, and we have, I'm sorry, somebody seems to have some noise coming from
I don't know if there's, after Don, I'm going to put you on mute, and then unmute you after the poem is read.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you.
So we have How to Wear Red Lipstick by Tribal Man and Laurent. I wonder if you could read this for us, please.
Certainly. How to Wear Red Lipstick. When he says he has to work late, I didn't really know what that means. Just another chance for women to be given our own unique way, making a bold statement that I was here. Commanding a room is our distinction. Walls watching our influences as we strut ourselves in high heels. When I was told of a new youngster looking blonde receptionist, of a new younger looking blonde receptionist working in his office, well, I never pass at a teaching moment. Staring me back at my face, after all, a woman in her late 30s is just in her prime. She knows how to wear red lipstick. I smell like a woman should. Waiting for the elevator, seeing how the room conforms with me, prancing inside my red-tipped fingernail pushes the button. The 10th floor, thinking to myself as I brush back my dark brown hair, wondering why we have never had sex in this elevator. Since the room light up as I enter through the door, the receptionist greets me with a young kind of smile and wide eyes. Tells me politely, Mr. Harding doesn't see clients at 6 p.m. So I set down my Gucci bag where she can see it. Well, now, tell him his wife is here for this dinner. I replied while removing my white gloves. I'm starving, he says. And I take out his meal, graciously cooked for him. Well, so am I, as I unbutton my blouse with a coy grin, remove my tight-fitting black miniskirt to show him I'm not wearing anything but a clean-shaven smile. His hands smoldering my body up against the office glass, absorbing his kisses on my bare abdomen and further down to where I can't stand it any longer, begging him to enter me. With each thrust, my head would hit the window, wrapped my thighs tighter around his waist, steamed out ecstasy. He follows with his own passion, bellowed out, rests and kiss him on the neck of his white collar, leaving, turned and saw the girl blushing red behind the reception desk, look deep into her dilated eyes, staring back at me. I scolded her, saying, a woman has to know in life how to wear red lips. End poem.
Wow. This was a really steamy, sensual poem by Tribal Man, and I do love red scarlet lipstick. And this poem just made me smile when I was listening to Laurent read it in his, I would say, his hot, smoldering voice. And I really liked the imagery towards the bottom where he wrote, dress and kiss him on the neck of its white collar, leaving, turned, and I saw the girl blushing red behind the reception desk, looked into her dilated eyes, staring back at me, and I scolded her, saying, a woman has to know in life how to wear red lipstick. Mm-hmm. And that's to imprint it on every bare space. Woo! Okay. So now we're going to get some comments. Oh, no, is everybody still there? I don't hear anybody.
We're here.
Ms.
Honestly,
Katie?
We're stunned.
Ms.
We're
Katie?
Totally stunned, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to comment, or shall I shut up now?
No, I don't want you to shut up. I want you to let me know what you think, sweetheart.
Thank you. I wasn't very sure if it was my turn or not, but yes, I'm happy to.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was smoking. Really very good. I didn't quite expect it to go that way, actually. So, Laurent, I do apologize. I'm so sorry. It was a little bit more steamy than I expected it to be. Oops. But I liked it. I mean, you have to admire. Remove my tight-fitting black miniskirt to show him I'm not wearing anything but a clean-shaven smile. I mean, come on. That's epic. So cool. Yes. It really amused me. I don't know whether it should have amused me, but it certainly did. I really enjoyed it. And your read was brilliant, Laurent. So thank you so much for that.
It was. And thank you for such a fabulous comment, Miss Katie. And Laurent, you did such a fabulous job in reading Tribal Nun's poem. I would love to know your thoughts.
How would you? Hey, to read a woman, to read a poem in a woman's voice, I'm not going to say it takes any special skill, but you got to be willing to sound a little unlike yourself. But I found this one easy to get into because I simply transposed myself from a woman into a man in my mind. And I was going to see my wife. I was putting her up against the window. And her head was banging every time. Not mine. It was seductive. It was adult. It was descriptive. It had a little touch of humor. I thought it was written in an interesting way. And I very much liked it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Laurent. Excellent comment. And what did you think about the poem, Bill?
I was thinking a lot of things, but when you talked about how you like to wear this red lipstick, I lost everything in my mind. And but now I'm coming back to it. And one of the predominant aspects of this comes out in the third stanza. Because initially, this seems to be setting up this idea of this relationship the woman has, but there's some younger blonde that is now working around her man. And instead of being threatened by that, this woman is very confident in herself and the fact that a woman of her age, I won't say age, that's probably not the right word, but a woman of her maturity, a woman of her knowing, is able to handle a man better than some young thing that only has their looks to go on. And how do we know that this woman has all that maturity and knowing? Because she knows how to wear red lipstick. And I get the sense that she knows her man, too. The other example of her knowing is in the fourth stanza, and she makes this reference to going into an elevator and seeing how the room conforms with her, which means that now the space is reshaping itself to accommodate her. I love that passage. It wasn't some months back, I was at a place in Orlando, and I found myself in an elevator, and I realized of the six of us and the five women in me, it was just me with these five women. I had never more wished that elevator would break down, and I announced it to the group that this has always been my fantasy. Yeah, they didn't really care for the remark. They looked at me a little sideways. They don't know that I'm just safe and silly. But I love this, I guess because of this fantasy I've always had of being in an elevator. the idea of her thinking about why had they never had sex in that elevator before. I don't know. I know I only want to work in that office. Wherever she's working, I want to be there. It's very hot.
Thank you, Bill.
Very hot stuff. And that's all I got.
Okay, thank you. And after Anne, what did you think of this poem? Hello? Okay, well, I don't know if he has this on hold, because I unmuted him.
I apologize. I was on mute. I'm enjoying the feedback.
Okay.
I'm enjoying the camaraderie. I'm enjoying the whole element going on in the room. Like, and I like the things that were said with the feeling and inflection. I think inflection makes a great point. So that's my take on it.
Okay. Thank you. Wonderful comment. And I'm going to put you back on mute because our sound system picks up everything, even cute little kids. So I'm going to put you on mute, and I think we still have time for, and then let me check, that it's gone so fast tonight. We still have 7 minutes left, so we have time for one more, Katie.
Yep, we have it there, To Seize Love by Hako Pako. And Bill, would you like to read this book for us, please?
Yeah, let me just pull that up. I'm coming.
Okay, no problem.
One moment.
If you have a problem, I can do the reading for you, but just let me know.
Okay, now I see the one I was supposed to read. Go back to the groups. There we go.
So this is To Seize Love. And whenever you're ready.
Okay. It's called To Seize Love again. A poppy blows. We hold sunsets, aging between wrinkles that marry the sky. Our hands unfurl by the creek, imprinting memories sheltered in fingertips. End.
Thank you, Bill. You did a fabulous read of Adam's poem, To Seize Love by Hako Pako. You know, this is one of the shortest brevities I've ever seen him write. I found the visuals beautiful and they were charming. And our hands unfurled by the creek, imprinting memories sheltered in fingertips. Ah, what a beautiful memory. You could just literally see this happening even with our own selves. You know, I just thought this was so gorgeous, and you did a beautiful read. What did you think, Katie?
Funnily enough, I was thinking that this was one of the longer ones of his that I've seen. So obviously we're not seeing the same thing. Oh, and maybe my brain's going, it's probably an age thing. Ignore me. But I thought it was, again, lovely. It usually is with Adam. He does have this amazing ability to build a whole world within a few words, which I envy. I envy so much, and he does it so well. And the stanzas that you quoted were the ones that I was also looking at, because I thought that those last few lines were just wonderful. Imprinting memories sheltered in fingertips. Now, come on, that's just so clever. So, yes, I really enjoyed it, Adam. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. And I would love to know what you think, Laurent, if you got back yet. Laurent?
Yes, I just sat down, and you know I missed the poem, so I'll leave a textual remark, if that's all right.
Okay, thank you. And what did you think about the poem, Bill?
Well, I really like how the beginning, when he talks about we hold sunsets aging between, which references this passing of time, that, you know, this one sunset leads to a new day. And the reference for me is of two people who are, you know, enjoying the sunset and holding on to not only the day, but the passing of one day to the next. And that's sort of referenced in the third stanza when it says wrinkles that marry the sky. So here are these hands that are being held, And even as, you know, this aging goes on and the days passing between those sunsets, as he said, the wrinkles are marrying the sky. And in that marriage, there's this, you know, if you compare it with the sunset, there's this beauty in that staying and in the connectivity between the two and their hands unfurled by the creek, imprinting memories that are sheltered in fingertips. I don't know if this is true for everybody. I may not remember every girl I've ever kissed, but I certainly remember those that I held hands with and we walked.
Mm-hmm.
So there's something power and something about the power of touch.
Mm-hmm. And sharing those memories is a very romantic poem. Thank you, Bill. And After Dawn, what did you think of that beautiful poem by Parco Parco?
It's very moving. I'm very, very, very deep into my bag. I really like how everybody is bringing a personal element to these pieces. It's not just reading the piece, but you can tell they put a lot of time in that piece. So I really liked it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And Miss Katie, I think we have time for one short one. If you look at the list, there's a poem by Michael McDermott.
Again, great minds think alike. That was the very one I have ready to go. So here we have Twilight's Horizon. Isn't that amazing? That's just so cool. So I love when serendipity comes along. Twilight's Horizon by Michael McDermott. And, you know, I think I'll read this one, because I have done nothing all day but sit on my little seat. So, Twilight's Horizon by Michael McDermott. As sunlight goes down on Tuscany's day, twilight's horizon ribbons perform a display. Then we settle there during dimming light to watch faded colors merge into night. End poem.
Oh, you did a gorgeous read of Michael McDermott's poem. We only have 90 seconds left, so Laurence, you didn't get to comment, so could you please comment on this?
Certainly.
And Michael's poem?
Tuscany. Yes, Tuscany is an absolutely beautiful region. And when the sunlight goes down, goes down on Tuscany's day, the combination of what is grown there seems to color the air in a strange way when the light shines. Until, of course, it does dim, the colors do fade, and they merge into night. He's captured so much on a short piece. It's a beautiful piece.
Agreed. And you are our last commenter to close the show. Laurent, thank you for that beautiful comment and the beautiful read, Katie, and the poem by Michael McDormand. I want to thank Katie from Scotland, my special girl, and Bill and Laurent and After Dawn, for calling in. And I also would like to thank Naomi from Canada and Frank for hanging out in the group and commenting. We love you guys. Te quiero mucho y te amo mucho. Buenas noches. Good night, everybody. I love you guys.
Buenas noches.
And
thank
Katie,
you,
Brian.
We're
going to
be missing you. We'll be missing you for a month while she is in sunny Spain. So take care. Safe
thank
travel.
You, my darling.
Love you very
I
much.
I love you.
Good night,
thank
everybody.
You
thank
good
you.
Night,
bye-bye. Good night.